or the 99 things you need to know. Number 2. Nobody knows how many things there are to know. Number 3. It's more than 3. Number 4. There's no way of knowing how many things you need to know. Number 5. Some of the things you need to know are things you already know. Number 6. Some of the things you need to know are things you only think you know. Number 7. Some of the things you need to know are things you used to know and then forgot. Number 8. Some of the things you need to know are things you only thought you forgot and actually still know. Number 9. Some of the things you need to know are things you know but don't really know you know. Number 10. Some of the things you need to know are things you don't yet know you need to know. Number 11. Some of the things you think you need to know are things you probably don't really need to know. Number 12. Some of the things you need to know are things known only by people you don't know. Number 13. Some of the things you need to know are things nobody knows. Number 14. Some of the things you need to know are things that are unknowable. Number 15. Some of the things you need to know are things that can only be imagined. Number 16. At any time, the list of things you need to know can be abruptly suspended. Now you know. Earlier in the book, in the first section on this subject of euphemistic language, I mentioned several reasons we seem to employ so much of it. The need to avoid unpleasant realities, the need to make things sound more important than they really are, marketing demands, pretentiousness, boosting employee self-esteem, and in some cases just plain old political correctness. But no matter their purpose, the one thing euphemisms all have in common is that they soften the language. They portray reality as less vivid. And I've noticed Americans have a problem with reality. They prefer to avoid the truth and not look it in the eye. I think it's one of the consequences of being fat and prosperous and too comfortable. So naturally, as time has passed and we've grown fatter and more prosperous, the problem has gotten worse. Here's a good example. There's a condition in combat. Most people know it by now. It occurs when a soldier's nervous system has reached the breaking point. In World War I, it was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables. Shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. Shell shock. That was 1917. A generation passed. Then, during the Second World War, the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Stretches it out. The words don't seem to hurt as much. And fatigue is a softer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. The condition was being euphemized. More time passed and we got to Korea in 1950. By that time, Madison Avenue had learned well how to manipulate the language, and the same condition became operational exhaustion. It had been stretched out to 8 syllables. Took longer to say, so the impact was reduced, and the humanity was completely squeezed out of the term. It was now absolutely sterile. Operational exhaustion. Sounded like something that might happen to your car. And then, finally, we got to Vietnam. And given the dishonesty surrounding that war, I guess it's not surprising that at the time, the very same condition was renamed post-traumatic stress disorder. It was still 8 syllables, but a hyphen had been added. And at last, the pain had been completely buried under psychojargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'd be willing to bet anything that if we'd still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have received the attention they needed at the time they needed it. But it didn't happen, and I'm convinced one of the reasons was that softer language we now prefer. The new language. The language that takes the life out of life. You don't hear the word millennium much anymore, do you? It's kind of sad. Here's a word that lies around for long periods of time looking for work, but never really doing very much. Then every 1,000 years, things suddenly pick up, and there's a flurry of activity. The word is on everyone's lips, and it's heard in almost every conversation. It stays red hot for several years, enjoying its popularity, seeing its name in newspapers and magazines, making appearances on radio and TV. But then a peak is reached, and after a while, things begin to slow down. The activity tapers off, and before long, it's once again relegated to history books, academic journals, and reference works. Goodbye, poor millennium. I'm going to miss you. When you return, I may not be here to welcome you back. I saw two bumper stickers on a car. Hate is not a family value, and value all families. What is the purpose of having things like this on your car? Certainly it's not to change someone else's opinion of family life at a red light. More likely, the purpose is to inform us that the driver doesn't hate anyone, and that he considers himself pure and virtuous and better than the rest of us. So it's actually self-righteousness. The driver apparently forgot that the seven deadly sins include both anger and pride. I don't care if Michael Jackson freaked off with little boys or not. It doesn't bother me. Fuck those kids, and fuck their greedy parents, too. What's important to me is that Michael is the greatest entertainer who ever lived, bar none. Watch him dance. Pay attention to the showmanship. No one ever came close. Elvis was a bogus white guy with sex appeal and good looks who ripped off a lot of great black music, watered it down, and made it safe for lame whites who couldn't handle the experience of raw, emotional black music. Never grew as an artist, remained an entertainer. Fuck Elvis. Sammy Davis Jr.? Nice try. Ordinary dancer, ordinary singer, second-rate impressionist. I also didn't like the insincere sincerity. But he was a nice man personally. I give him credit for that. Frank Sinatra? Great singer of songs, among the best. Superb musician, grew as an artist. No showmanship, though. Arrogant, too, and mean to ordinary people. Fuck him. Michael Jackson buries them all. I say give him a bunch of kids and let them dance. I've decided to cash in on TV's reality show trend, and I have several ideas, but they may need a little work, you know, before I approach the networks. Here's what I'm working on. This first idea grew out of Survivor, but I have a new twist. You put 12 people on a barren island, and you let them starve to death. You make sure they get no food, but you provide plenty of fresh drinking water. You don't want them to die of thirst. You want them to starve to death. Now, that would be entertaining enough, but here's the fun. You make sure half the contestants are large, aggressive, physically fit individuals, and the other half are small, mild-mannered, and physically weak. Then you wait them out and see who survives. And more fun than that, you watch how they survive. The show is called Guess Who's for Dinner. The only part I haven't decided yet is whether to provide utensils. Here's another idea I think has a pretty good shot with the networks. Maniac on Drugs. Each week, you put a different homicidal maniac in a van filled with assault rifles, and you provide him with large amounts of speed, crack, acid, and PCP. Then, you just let him drive around New York City for several days, and you videotape everything he does. Naturally, you clear all this with the police, so they don't interfere with the smooth flow of the show. At the end of 13 weeks, you take all the maniacs, give them a fresh supply of drugs, and turn them loose at Disney World with rocket-propelled grenades. Huh? Actually, now that I think about it, this idea is too good for the networks. I'm going to put it on pay-per-view. Here's a variation for the finale, in case the Disney people get squeamish. You give the maniacs the same drugs, but instead of grenade launchers, you go back to the assault rifles. Everything's the same, but this time you put them on an ordinary non-stop passenger train from New York to Los Angeles. You strap video cameras to their heads, and you let them run loose on the train, allowing them to befriend the other passengers. Remember, it's non-stop. No one can get off. I guarantee you'd get some really great footage. By the way, to save a little money, this could also be done on a Greyhound bus. But you'd need a really good driver who isn't easily distracted. Here's the show I'm the proudest of because it took the most thought. I call it Lucky Bachelor. Our chosen guy is selected from letters sent into the show. In step one, the Lucky Bachelor is sent out on three separate occasions to pick up women in cheap bars and bring each of them to a hotel where he tries to fuck them. If they go along easily, he then convinces them to commit a perverted act involving a floor lamp, a woodpecker, and a box of rubber bands. An act most people would consider completely depraved. All this activity is videotaped. In step two, we stop three men at random on the street, show them the videos, and ask them which of the women the Lucky Bachelor should marry. That woman is called the designated bride. We then ask the two losing women to vote on which one of the three random street guys looks like the best fuck. That guy is called the designated best fuck street guy. In step three, we take the two losing street guys and the two losing bar girls and feed them near-fatal doses of aphrodisiacs, put them in thong bathing suits, and turn them loose in an adult sex shop with unlimited credit. This footage, strictly an added feature, could possibly be some of the liveliest on the show. Now, the alert listener is probably wondering what happened to our original lucky bachelor. Well, in step four, we arrange for him and the designated best fuck street guy to stage a bare-knuckle fistfight to the death in the center aisle of St. Peter's in Rome during a papal high mass. The two men must keep fighting until one of them dies. It's important to the show. As a side feature, we keep a camera trained on the Pope, and every time he falls asleep during the fight, we give the guys an extra $100. The reason it's important that one of the two men dies is because the next day, in the same church, we're going to hold step five, a combination wedding and funeral. The loser of the fight gets the funeral. The winner gets to marry the designated hotel fuck bride, with the remaining losing bar and hotel participants serving as bridesmaids and pallbearers. We then give the newlyweds all the leftover drugs from Maniac on Drugs and send them on a honeymoon to some nice conservative golfing resort on Hilton Head Island, where they're required to take large amounts of drugs and 2 weeks of golf and tennis lessons. This next one is my makeover show. My working title is Try Looking Like That for a Change. You start by picking three incredibly beautiful, successful supermodels, and then, against their wills, you sedate them, strap them down, and subject them to extensive plastic surgery. You give them big misshapen noses, sagging eye bags, and plenty of wrinkles and drooping skin on their faces. Then you pump enough fat into their asses, hips, and thighs to make them really unhappy. When they come out of the anesthesia, the audience yells, "Try looking like that for a change!" I'm so excited about this one that I'm working on a variation that involves involuntary sex change surgery. Well, that's about it for reality shows. I suppose all that's left would be for me to tell you about a show called Bowel Movement. Basically, it's a show that involves a fixed-position camera, a toilet, and a series of guys with diets organized primarily around beer and extra-spicy Mexican food. Perhaps it's better if I don't go into too much detail at this time. And you know something I'm thinking? This one might actually belong on cable. Well, that's it, folks. I've done all I can to develop a hit show, but the creative process can only take you so far. The rest is up to you, the public, and I'm counting on your good taste. First, let me say that most people take these so-called tragedies, like Columbine and Oklahoma City, far too seriously. You have to remember, it's all part of the American way of life. If you live in America, you have to go along with these things. You can't be sitting around whining, "Oh, a lot of people got killed." These things happen, folks. People get killed. But concerning the guys, and it's always men, who commit these mass killings, and other less dramatic murders for that matter, after the sentence of death is passed, you'll usually see the whining families of the victims insist on watching the execution up close, through a little window. They want to see the guy die. Don't these people know there's nothing to see? It's uneventful. An attendant gives the guy an injection. It's like watching someone get a flu shot. There's nothing to see. But they often get their wish, and they're allowed to witness what's little more than a medical procedure. Now, my feeling is, if you're going to let people watch some guy get executed, it would make much more sense to put on a little show for these ghouls. Entertain them. Place the guy in a small steel room, and send in four or five of these sadistic prison guards with steel pipes, and let them beat the guy to death for about an hour. A constant, uninterrupted 60-minute clubbing would seem far more in keeping with our national values. And of course, this method would be much more satisfying to the families of these so-called victims, these fine, upstanding religious families who believe in a merciful God. They'd enjoy watching these psychotic, animalistic prison guards doing what comes naturally, administering a nice, brutal clubbing. Prison guards who, by the way, dare I say, are also all fine, upstanding religious people as well. Folks, if you're going to do these things, don't settle for halfway measures. Do them right. Do them the Christian way. As a public service, next weekend, Boy Scouts will be picking up litter and trash from America's highways and dumping it in America's rivers. If you'd like to pitch in and help the Boy Scouts, bring some of your own trash from home and throw it out the window of your car as you drive along your favorite road. You'll be doing your part to keep the highways clean. By the way, if you have any ideas about cleaning up the rivers, let us know. I'm tired of these Canadians who have worked in the American news media for years and still haven't learned to pronounce the words out and about. Peter Jennings is one of them, and there are about three or four more prominent ones. These people need to be taught that it's out and about, not oot and aboot. I say if you can't learn the language, it's about time you got the fuck out of here. Besides, Canadians are just disguised English people, and it's a well-known fact that all English people deserve to die. Things I wonder about the FBI's list of the 10 most wanted criminals. When they catch a guy and he comes off the list, does number 11 automatically move up? And does he see it as a promotion? Does he call his criminal friends and say, "I made it, Bruno. I'm finally on the list." How about when a new, really dangerous guy comes along, and they absolutely have to put him at the top of the list without delay? Call it number one with a bullet, if you wish. Doesn't everyone else have to move down a notch? And doesn't one guy get dropped off? How do they decide which guy to drop? Is it automatically number 10? And how does he feel about that? Does he feel slighted? Does he feel maybe it should have been someone else? Has anyone who was demoted ever killed the new guy to gain his spot back? One last question. Does the FBI search harder for number 3 than they do for number 7? I would. Otherwise, why have the numbers at all? These are the kind of thoughts that keep me from making any real progress in life. There are too many people, period. There have always been too many people, from the beginning. If these diaper-sniffing Christian baby-mongers would stop having so many of these cross-eyed little kids, maybe the rest of us would have a chance to spread out and have a little fun. Excess children waste our natural resources. If this society wants me to conserve energy, it had better get some of these child-worshipping religious fanatics to stop having 5, 6, or 7 babies. When they do that, I'll start turning off the lights. And yeah, I know the fertility rate is down. Good. It should go down even further. Every family should be allowed half a child. If that. I live in Los Angeles. Who are all these guys in their 20s out on the streets skateboarding at 2 and 3 in the afternoon? They're 20s. Get off the streets and find work, motherfucker. And by the way, I'm not talking about X Games guys who are really good at it. That's different. That's a way of life. I'm talking about these skateboard fucks who look like they're actually going somewhere. As if the skateboard were a means of transportation. What the fuck's the deal with these guys? Same with these rollerblading and scooter fucks. Why are these fully grown men out on the street playing with children's toys during working hours? And wearing helmets, for Christ's sakes. Jesus, I would be so embarrassed to wear a helmet. Grow up, motherfucker. And while you're at it, stay out of the range of my car. I might just decide to run some consumer tests on those helmets. I might also decide to clear the streets of all non-essential traffic. So get a job or play on the sidewalk with the rest of the kids. I find I'm starting to get more compassionate. I gotta watch that. Children's Hospital in New York is quite an amazing place. On a recent visit, I saw 2 7-year-olds performing a kidney transplant. Be careful whom you befriend. They will eventually ask you for something. When she was getting fucked by Roy Rogers, do you think Dale Evans ever screamed, "Giddy up, Roy"? Here's a dead-end business. A shoeshine stand at the beach. Mexico has a new holiday known as the name-calling fiesta. People dress up in colorful costumes and do a series of folk dances while they call each other cocksucker and motherfucker. Then they all get drunk and eat a big meal. Michael Jackson missed his calling. If he had become a Catholic priest, he could have spent 30 or 40 years blowing all the little boys he wanted, and no one would have said a word. Hard work is a misleading term. Physical effort and long hours don't really constitute hard work. Hard work is when someone pays you to do something you'd rather not be doing. Anytime you'd rather be doing something other than the thing you're doing hard work. Cosmologists are just now beginning to accept the possibility that the Big Bang was actually caused by a huge explosion in a meth lab. Hello, I'm Howard Finley, and I'm running for state's attorney general. This is my pledge to you. If I am elected and someone breaks the law, I will personally go to his house and beat the shit out of him. Thank you. Why does it always take longer to get somewhere than it does to come back? Hey, what's with these recumbent bicycles? Listen, buddy, if you want to take a nap, lie down. If you want to ride a bike, buy a fucking bicycle. I prefer people with imagination. Dictators, serial killers, schizophrenics, assassins, skinheads, drug lords, violent bikers, devil worshippers. To me, these are the interesting people. To get its edge back, I think what America really needs is more evil. Intense, unalloyed, concentrated evil. I was reading a fitness magazine that had an article about cross-training, and I realized this would have been a good idea for Jesus. People who see life as anything more than pure entertainment are missing the point. I'll tell you one thing, the future ain't what it used to be. Wouldn't it be fun if all at once everybody just forgot everything they knew? These professional child worshippers say we should put the needs of children first. Why? What about the needs of adults? We come second? It's stupid. If you put the needs of children first, you're going to wind up with way too many diapers and lollipops and not nearly enough bongs and condoms. What happened? Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Madison, Adams, Hamilton. Things were going well. Ford, Quayle, Mondale, Agnew, Nixon, Clinton, Dole, Bush 1, Bush 2. What happened? This morning I had a great idea, but it was too late to put it into the book. I just wanted you to know that this is where it would have gone. True fact. There's a radio commercial that says a certain diet pill works 3 times faster than starvation. Here's my question. Are they guessing? Or did they really run these tests? Here's something you can't do by yourself. Practice shaking hands. Stop in today at Ann Bennington's Quality Cyst Removal. Regular cysts, $5. Really big, difficult cysts, $1 a pound. Ann Bennington's Cyst Removal for the Discerning. This is the optimist. I have no friends, no family, no money, no food, no job, no credit, no luck, no hope, and no future. However, I do have matches, toothpicks, chewing gum, paper clips, rubber bands, shoelaces, and scotch tape. Maybe things aren't so bad after all. Am I the only one who thinks the Muppets weren't funny? If you have twins, a good idea is to sell one of them. What the fuck, you got two? Why not pick up a few dollars? When child abuser Father John Gagan was killed in prison, he was 68 years old. If a psychic had attended his ordination some 40 years earlier and told his parents, "When John is 68, he will be strangled to death in prison while serving time for touching children's penises," at the very least, there would have been a small commotion. True fact, there is now a gay softball World Series. A children's museum sounds like a good idea, but I would imagine it's not very easy to breathe inside the little glass cases. Why is it the only time you ever hear the word figment, it's in relation to the imagination? Aren't there any other kinds of figments? If everyone in the world sat quietly at the same time, closed their eyes, and concentrated as hard as they could on peace and goodwill, all the killing and cruelty in the world would continue, and probably increase.
You know what you never see? A Korean guy with freckles and a big hook nose.
I wonder, when we pick up the telephone, does each of us get his own individual dial tone? Or is there just one system-wide master dial tone that each of us jumps on and off when we need it? These things eat at me. If a safe is unlocked, is it still a safe? Here's an optical illusion you can try at home. Take a pencil and make a small black dot in the middle of an ordinary piece of paper. Cover your left eye and stare at the dot from a distance of about 2 inches. You will see the Battle of Chancellorsville. If you don't, check the paper. Or maybe you made the dot wrong. Just because you don't have a lot of money to spend is no reason you shouldn't spend what little you have. You know what would be a good promotional idea for a singles bar? Date Rape Friday. Drinks half price, free GHB, free Plan B pills, free RU486 morning after pills, free rape counseling, and generous rebate coupons for an abortion clinic. That takes care of attracting the men. I'm still working on how to get some women to show up. I had no shoes and I felt sorry for myself, until I met a man with no feet. I took his shoes. Now I feel better. You know what would have been a smart thing to do in these developing countries that need electricity? To have tried large-scale experiments with alternative energy sources, solar, wind, geothermal, etc. We could have tested and tried to perfect these technologies on a large scale in places that need it. That would have been smart. That's why we didn't do it. You know what you never see? A really good-looking homeless couple. I always wondered if the Library of Congress provides books in their public toilets to promote reading. I should think they wouldn't want to pass up a captive audience like that. Here is a generic joke. A person goes into a place and says something to another person. The second person says something back to the first person, who listens to that and then says something back to the second person. The thing he says back is really funny. Stick around, folks. China's gonna win it all. True fact. In Moscow, there's a professional entertainer who is described as a Hitler impersonator. Showbiz.
Get one now. Everybody has one. They're almost gone. New, super deluxe, jumbo, handy, portable, lightweight, convenient, collapsible, pre-wrapped, easy to use, guaranteed, available in all sizes and designer colors. Get one now. Won't rust, tarnish, blister, crack, or peel. But it will cause tumors.
I think the safety instructions that airline flight attendants deliver before departure could be greatly improved if they were simply a bit more honest and complete. They should include graphic descriptions, accompanied by animated and live-action video, of the devastating physical damage done to the human body during a crash. They should cite examples of various anatomical mutilations. They should also include a detailed description of the damage done to the lungs and skin by fire and smoke inhalation to demonstrate that surviving the impact of the crash alone is not always sufficient. People deserve the truth. Then, how about a more relaxed, breezy pre-flight announcement, done in the cadences of young people? Hi, listen, we'll be leaving soon. Then we're going to fly a while and get there, possibly this afternoon, okay? Later on, we'll chow down, have some brews, and maybe catch a movie, okay? And hey, try not to ring your bell a lot and wake us up, unless something really scary is going on, okay? Thanks. Oh, and by the way, the captain says do that thing with the belts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're leveling off at our cruising altitude. That means the cockpit crew will soon be lighting up and enjoying a few hits of something really nice we picked up in Hawaii. After about 6 hits, they're going to turn off the autopilot, take their hands off the controls, and let the plane do whatever it wants for a couple of minutes. The captain suggests you keep your seatbelts fastened during this period unless you have a strong appetite for blunt trauma.
The captain has just turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. He didn't mean to, but the joint he was smoking fell in his lap, and when he jumped up, his head hit the switch. The captain has turned off the seatbelt sign, but he cautions you to stay alert, as sometimes these planes don't work as well as we'd like them to.
The captain has just turned the seatbelt sign on again. Of course, he also stuffed a pound of walnuts up his nose, one by one, so you can decide for yourselves what you want to do about the belts. The pilots who give announcements from the cockpit while you're flying vary. They're not all the same. A socially responsible pilot might say, "On your right, you will see Las Vegas, where millions of visitors are fleeced out of their hard-earned money each year by huge impersonal hotels originally built by brutal criminal syndicates and now owned by brutal criminal corporations. These large impersonal hotels have no concern for service or quality, but merely wish to generate more gambling activity because the advantage is heavily weighted toward the house. Whores and drugs are available at all hours." Poetic pilot. "Off to your right, you'll see the Colorado River, as it snakes its way carefully through the ancient multicolored walls of the Grand Canyon, echoing mutely the dreams and disappointments of countless generations of red-skinned people who inhabited the Great Southwest." Here's an interesting pilot.
"There's the house where John Gacy lived. If you look carefully in his backyard, you can see the top of the chute where he dropped the bodies of the 26 children he killed. Over on the right, we'll soon be coming up to the gas station where Ted Bundy picked up his 23rd victim. Altogether, he's thought to have killed between 36 and 50 young women, almost all of whom parted their hair in the middle."
A political pilot. "Most of the farms you see used to belong to small farmers, but their land has been brutally repossessed by the greedy, grasping bankers, only to be bought up by huge agribusiness corporations who poison the land and produce tasteless food. These corporations receive billions of dollars a year from the taxpayers for no good reason except to enhance their wealth." Here's a pilot with the blues. "Ladies and gentlemen, I've been feeling kind of depressed lately, and I think you'll agree. We all share guilt for the world's suffering and deteriorating condition. Sometimes I ask myself, is it all worthwhile? Quite often I give up hope completely and try to think of interesting ways of killing myself that would get my name on television." Then we hear the sounds of a struggle in the cockpit.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we have just begun our gradual descent into the Indianapolis area, a descent similar in many ways to the gradual slide of the United States from a first-class world leader to an aggressive third-rate debtor nation of overweight slobs, undereducated slob children, and aimless elderly people who can't afford to buy medicine. The current conditions in Indianapolis, temperature 61 degrees, partly cloudy skies, winds from the southwest, and intense Midwestern boredom."
Now listen, I gotta tell you something, and I'm not gonna sugarcoat this because it is what it is. But boy, oh boy, am I getting tired of this handicap business. Aren't you? Huh? Don't you think this handicap shit has gone far enough? And I'm like you, folks. Normally I would feel sympathy for these people. But the first thing they tell you is they don't want sympathy. You ever hear them say that? "I don't want your sympathy." And I say, fine, fuck you, no sympathy. And by the way, if there are any handicapped people hearing this, I'm not talking about you, all right? I'm talking about the other handicapped people, the ones who'll never hear this. So don't get all excited and start rolling around causing trouble in your electric go-kart or whatever the fuck it is. Calm down. I'm on your side. And just to show you my heart's in the right place, I'm going to start out by mentioning a few of the positive things about the handicapped, okay? First of all, the big blue parking spaces. This was a great idea. I think most people would agree, those spaces come in mighty handy, which is where the word handicapped came from in the first place. A lot of people don't know that. They're always right near the entrance to the store or the building, and I find that I can get in and out of the place in a hurry and complete my business with a minimum of delay. Another handicap feature I enjoy are the extra-large toilet stalls in public restrooms. Once again, an excellent idea. There's so much room in there to spread out. It's like a gymnasium. I can do some push-ups, work on my kickboxing, try out a few dance steps. Occasionally, I bring a picnic lunch. Nothing fancy, just a small salad, a bit of cheese, and perhaps a delicate Bordeaux. I find that once you're locked in there, you can pretty much do what you want. About the only limitations might be common decency and a sensible regard for personal safety. One time I had a few friends over and we played cards all night. The good thing was, when one of the players had to take a shit, he didn't have to drop out of the game for several hands. He simply traded places with the guy who was using the toilet as a chair, and it worked out great. I mention all of this because I want you to know I recognize some of the positive things that have grown out of this unfortunate obsession America has with the handicapped. But on this subject, I also have a few complaints to make, the main one being this business at the airport of letting the handicapped get on the plane early. I don't like the idea of people boarding ahead of me just because they've had a run of bad luck. Doesn't seem fair. I think if a person's had some bad luck, it should apply across the board to all segments of his life. We shouldn't be going around trying to selectively fix people's bad luck. Now, what bothers me most about the process is I'm not sure all of these people are truly handicapped. Some of them don't look that fucked up to me. I think there's a fairly hefty amount of bullshitting going on at the check-in counter. The whole fiasco begins just before the flight with the parade of wheelchairs. And apparently just about anyone can get their hands on one of those airport wheelchairs. You know the ones I mean? The ones the airlines provide? Not a wheelchair some guy brings from home. I don't mind that. I figure if a guy's laid out money for his own wheelchair, he's probably legitimately fucked up. And I don't mind a guy getting ahead of me if he's legitimately fucked up. You know, like if a huge chunk of his head is missing, or he's got a whole caved-in chest, and two or three of his limbs don't work. Generally, in a case like that, I'm going to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. I say roll his ass down the jetway and let's get the fuck out of town. But to me, some of these airline wheelchair people don't look that fucked up. They just look old. And my guess is they're lazy. A lot of old people are lazy because somehow when they hit their 80s or 90s, they think it's time to take it easy. Old people aren't spry and full of ginger anymore. Now they're all just lazy. And frankly, I think they're just trying to get a free ride to the gate. But let's get back to the actual process of boarding. As soon as the wheelchair derby is over, the next thing you have to contend with is these people who show up with canes and crutches, what I call the quasi-handicapped. And even though I'm willing to cut the wheelchair people some slack, I'm not so easy on the cane folks. I'm convinced most of these jokers with canes don't really need them. And once again, it's the old people trying to gain sympathy and get to the front of the line. It's obviously a scam. Have you noticed, for instance, how suddenly these canes materialize out of nowhere? One minute everyone at the gate looks perfectly healthy, and the next minute half of them have a limp. And before you know it, there are 20 or 30 people leaning on canes. I'm convinced that somewhere in the airport, which has now become a large mall with airplanes as a side attraction, there must be a little place where you can rent canes. Canes for planes. But you know something? I'm not that upset. Not really. Because the best part about these handicapped people getting on the plane first is that they have to get off last. Fuck 'em! They always get off last. While they're still looking for their carry-on bags and rectal thermometers, I'm halfway into town. You see, life has a way of evening things out.
As we resume our look at the advance of euphemisms, we have to keep a close eye on the image makers, advertisers, marketers, public relations people. And to repeat an earlier point, it's important to remember that over time, this trend towards softer language has only gotten worse. I don't know when the whole thing started, but I do know that at some point in my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I wasn't consulted on this, didn't get a postcard, didn't get an email, no one bothered to call. It just happened. One day I simply found myself using bathroom tissue. And then, just as my loafers were becoming slip-ons, my sneakers turned into running shoes, and in no time my running shoes became athletic footwear. It was about then that a trip to the department store revealed that my lazy slob uniform of sweatpants and sweatshirt were now located in a section called activewear. The world was changing. I saw secondhand clothing referred to as vintage apparel. I saw toupees advertised as hair appliances, in keeping, I would imagine, with the dental appliances that had long since replaced false teeth. Of course, if you didn't want to wear a hairpiece or a rug, there's a nice old-fashioned term, you could always look around for a good, reliable hair replacement system. Keep an eye out for systems. They're everywhere. The clerk who sold me my answering machine said I was purchasing a voice processing system. A mattress and box spring set is now called a sleep system. And the people who sell mops have not been resting. According to a commercial I saw recently, the Clorox Ready Mop is now America's favorite mopping system.
And if you think you can escape these systems by going for a drive, forget it. Your car has been systematically infiltrated too. The heater and air conditioner became the climate control system. Your brakes have been replaced by a braking system, and your seatbelts and airbags are now known as the impact management system. You can't beat the system. Marketers will always strive to make things sound more impressive than they really are. That's why dashboards became instrument panels. And how's this for laying it on thick? A magazine ad recently informed me that the cars depicted were equipped with leather seating surfaces. When you get right down to it, you have to admit, marketing people have a ton of balls. The upgrading continued. At home, I found myself watching animation instead of cartoons. And it turns out all those TV shows I'd seen before were really not reruns. They were encore presentations. At about that time, I noticed that soap operas had begun billing themselves as daytime dramas. Theaters felt overdue for an upgrade, too, so they became performing arts centers, or sometimes performance spaces, in keeping with the spirit of certain nightclubs, who now speak of themselves as party spaces. The really hip just call them spaces. While all this was happening in smaller locations, the big arenas decided they wanted to be known as events centers. Center is another word that's become important. Hospitals have long thought of themselves as medical centers, but now libraries have joined the chorus, calling themselves learning resources centers. And just to wrap this section up, and returning to show business for a moment, no matter what size the place where entertainment was being presented, at some point, it was decided they would all just be called venues. Systems, facilities, spaces, centers, and venues. They're all words to keep an eye on in today's atmosphere of increasing self-importance. Want some more changes? Profits became earnings. Personnel became human resources. The complaint department became customer relations. People started offering feedback instead of criticism. Car sickness turned into motion discomfort. Messengers became couriers. Junk mail morphed into direct marketing. Special delivery was suddenly priority mail. And after all these years, I picked up the phone and discovered information was identifying itself as directory assistance. I don't even want to mention my dismay at the fact that every old-fashioned shady used car dealer in a plaid jacket was suddenly selling certified pre-owned vehicles. By this time, the dump had become the landfill. I guess it was inevitable. The garbage men who fill it had long since become sanitation engineers. And in some cities, garbage collection was going by the fancy and misleading name Environmental Services. The change has even got me where I lived. According to the Census Bureau, my apartment had become a dwelling unit, and when I asked my janitor to put a peephole in the door, I discovered later that actually the custodial engineer had installed an observation port. One day, a buck-tooth girl told me she had overbite. That was the day I traded in my glasses for prescription eyewear. Of course, some of these language upgrades are more widespread than others. Admittedly, they're not all universal. For instance, we still have motels. But some of them wanted to charge a little more, so they became motor lodges. We also still have house trailers, but if they're for sale and profits are involved, they become motor homes, mobile homes, modular homes, or manufactured housing. So apparently, what we thought all this time was a trailer park is actually a manufactured home community. I guess the lesson is we never quite know what we're dealing with. Could it be that all these years on the Jerry Springer show, we've actually been watching manufactured home community trash? And I guess you've noticed the trip to the drugstore has changed a lot. The products have all been transformed. To start with, the medicine I used to take is now called medication. I have a hunch medication costs more than medicine. Mouthwashes are dental rinses. Deodorants have been joined on the shelf by antiperspirants, probably because sweat has become nervous wetness. A plain old bar of soap these days is being described variously as a bath bar, a cleansing bar, and a clarifying bar. Can you imagine your mother saying, "Young man, if I hear that word out of you one more time, I'm going to wash your mouth out with a clarifying bar." Doesn't sound right, does it? The hair people have taken liberties, too. Hairspray, too ordinary. Try holding mist. Of course, if you don't want holding mist, you can always turn to shaping mousse or sculpting gel, anything to get you to pay a little more. Cough drops have grown up and turned into throat lozenges, some even calling themselves pastilles or troches. Guess what? Right, $2 more for lozenges, pastilles, and troches. I can remember in television's early days when constipation was called occasional irregularity. These days, in a kind of minor reverse euphemism trend, we're back to constipation, which parallels the recent TV comeback made by diarrhea. No more lower gastric distress. Diarrhea. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. The new TV candor. Even though you still can't say shit. And by the way, doctors used to claim that constipation could be relieved by eating more roughage. Now they're pushing fiber. I still prefer roughage. If I want fiber, I eat a basket. And hey, lady, advancing age causing vaginal friction? Tell the pharmacist you have a personal dryness problem. I'm sure he has some sort of intimate feminine lubricating solution to recommend. That's the way they describe crotch products now. Even a good old-fashioned douche has turned into a feminine wash. And remember feminine hygiene sprays? Personally, they didn't sound very tasty to me. If they had come in flavors, they might have been more successful. Vaginilla. Crotchocolate. Labia lime. Just a thought. Anyway, the latest female product I've heard of is protective underwear, which frankly, folks, I don't even want to think about. Because I enjoy following the exploits of serial killers, I'm always hoping they never get caught. So I've compiled a list of suggestions to help them stay on the loose longer. That way they can provide me with maximum entertainment. Here's my message to the killers. If you're looking for some form of perverted attention and publicity, I can't help you. But if you just want to kill a lot of people one by one, I'm your guy. Here's how you can maximize the time it will take the police to apprehend you. Make sure your victims are not all the same types. Kill a variety of people. Tall, short, rich, poor, male, female, young, old. But don't kill them in any particular order. Do two old men in a row, then do a young woman, then a teenage boy. Mix blondes and brunettes and long hair and short. Don't bother with prostitutes. Vary the locations where you grab your victims and vary the times of day. Try to do your work in heavily populated areas where there are more murders to begin with. If at all possible, travel around the country and kill each victim in a different state. Never kill two people in the same city within a year. And don't travel in a straight line. Randomness is your greatest ally. Kill each of your victims in a completely different manner. Do some really weird ones. Then do some ordinary ones. Sexual, non-sexual, ritual, non-ritual. Don't specialize. Patterns are your enemy. Dispose of the bodies as far from the murder sites as possible. Always at least 100 miles. Bury some, burn some, and dissolve others in lime and acid. If you encounter any chance witnesses to any part of the killings or the disposals, they should be killed and disposed of with a minimum of fuss, and be sure to dispose of them separately. When driving to the murder, or especially the disposal sites, be careful not to break the law or have an accident. Use cash for everything. Don't stay in motels. Drive a late-model, van-type vehicle you can sleep in, and don't park it where the police might be expected to patrol. Have a large food supply and eat in the vehicle. If possible, change vehicles after every murder. Don't write notes to the police or taunt them in any way. It's dumb. Don't save newspaper clippings. Don't even read the newspaper accounts. Don't keep souvenirs from any of the victims. And start watching the CSI shows on CBS and the Law and Order shows on NBC. Every now and then, you'll pick up some piece of information that will help you avoid mistakes. Be smart and stay alive. Some of us are counting on you. The Wall Street Journal reminds you that your job as a businessman is to fuck the other guy before he fucks you. Sometimes you have to do such a complete job of fucking the other guy that he stays fucked for a long time, even to the point of going out of business and losing everything he owns. Quite often, the difference between getting fucked and being the one who does the fucking can be one small piece of business information, such as they're not making steam locomotives anymore, or the Zeppelin travel market has begun to decline. These two important business facts appeared recently in the Wall Street Journal. If you're a reptilian lowlife on your way up, stop getting fucked and start doing the fucking. Read the Wall Street Journal. In an earlier book, Brain Droppings, I wrote some things about politically correct language, but I left out a few areas. I neglected three important groups of people who have had this awkward, dishonest language inflicted on them by liberals. I omitted those who are crippled, ugly, or stupid. And so, to address these earlier omissions, I'd like to make a brief return visit to that playground of guilty white liberals, political correctness. Political correctness is America's newest form of intolerance, and it's especially pernicious because it comes disguised as tolerance. It presents itself as fairness, yet attempts to restrict and control people's language with strict codes and rigid rules. I'm not sure that's the way to fight discrimination. I'm not sure silencing people or forcing them to alter their speech is the best method for solving problems that go much deeper than speech. Therefore, those among you who are more politically sensitive than the rest of us may wish to take a moment here to tighten up those sphincter muscles, because I'm going to inject a little realism into the dream world of politically correct speech, especially the words we use to describe one another. Perhaps you've noticed that when the politically correct liberal rulemakers decide to rename a group of humans they view as victims, they begin by imparting a sense of shame to the group's existing name. And so somewhere over the years, the word cripple has been discarded. No one mentions cripples anymore. That's because in yet another stunning attempt to stand reality on its head, cripples have been assigned a new designation, the physically challenged. The use of physically challenged is an obvious attempt to make people feel better. The idea being, as long as we can't cure these people, let's give their condition a more positive name and maybe it'll distract everyone. It's verbal sleight of hand. The same is true of the ungainly phrase, differently abled. I believe that if a person is going to insist on using tortured language, such as differently abled, then he should be forced to use it to describe everyone. We're all differently abled. You can do things I can't do. I can do things you can't do. Barry Bonds can't play the cello. Yo-Yo Ma can't hit the curveball. They're differently abled. It should be explained to liberals, patiently, that crippled people don't require some heroic designation. It's a perfectly honorable condition. It appears in the Bible. Jesus healed the cripples. He didn't engage in rehabilitative strategies to improve the conditions of the physically disadvantaged. Can't these liberals hear how unattractive this language is, how poorly it sits on the ear? Personally, I prefer plain, descriptive language. For instance, and this is a suggestion that will bother some people, but I'm serious about it. Why don't we just call handicapped people defective? You know, we don't mind talking about birth defects. We don't flinch from that. We say Gunther has a birth defect. Isn't that a concession to the fact that people can be defective? Then what would be wrong with calling those people the physically defective? At what point in life does a person with a birth defect become a person who is differently abled? And why does it happen? I'm confused. Then there are those who don't quite measure up to society's accepted standards of physical attractiveness. The worst of that group are called ugly, or at least they used to be. The PC lingo cops have been working on this, too. And to demonstrate how far all this politically correct, evasive language has gone, some psychologists are actually now referring to ugly people as those with severe appearance deficits. Okay? Severe appearance deficits. So tell me, psychologist, how well does that sort of language qualify for being in denial?
These allegedly well-intentioned people have strayed so far from reality that it will not be a surprise for me to someday hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. Back to ugly. Regarding people's appearance, the political language police already have in place one comically distorted term, lookism. They say that when you judge a person, or rather size them up, wouldn't want to judge someone, that would be judgmental. If you take their looks into account, you're guilty of lookism. You're a lookist. And those valiant people who fight lookism, many of them unattractive themselves, tell us that one problem is that in our society, those who get to be called beautiful and those who are called ugly are determined by standards arbitrarily set by us. Somehow there's some fault attached to the idea that we, the people, are the ones who set the standards of beauty. Well, we're the ones who have to look at one another, so why shouldn't we be the ones who set the standards? I'm confused. I would say the whole thing was stupid, but that's my next topic, and it would sound like a cheap transition. So, stupid. It's important to face one thing about stupidity. We can't get away from it. It's all around us. It doesn't take a team of professional investigators to discover that there are stupid people in the world. Their presence and its effects speaks for itself. But where do these stupid people come from? Well, they come from American schools. But while they're attending these schools, they're never identified as stupid. That comes later, when they grow up. When they're kids, you can't call them stupid, which may be contributing to the problem. Unfortunately, kids, stupid or otherwise, come under a sort of protective umbrella we've established that prevents them from being exposed to the real world until at 18 their parents spring them on the rest of us, full grown. There are stupid